Our high school guidance counselor used to ask us what you would do if you had $1 million. You didn't have to work. And then invariably, whatever you'd say, that was supposed to be your career. So if you wanted to fix old cars, then you're supposed to be an auto mechanic.
So what did you say?
I never had an answer. I guess that's why I'm working at Initech.
No, you're working at Initech because that question is bullshit to begin with. If everyone listened to her, there'd be no janitors because no one would clean up if they had $1 million.
If I had $1 million. If I had $1 million.
I'm talking about millions of dollars.
What would you do if you had $1 million?
I'll tell you what I'd do, man. Two chicks at the same time, man.
We're living in a material world and I am a material girl or boy.
Well, what about you now? What would you do?
Besides two chicks at the same time?
Oh, yeah.
Nothing.
Nothing, huh?
I would relax. I would sit on my ass all day. I would do nothing.
Well, you don't need $1 million to do nothing, man. Take a look at my cousin. He's broke, don't do
If I had $1 million, if I had $1 million, well, I'd buy you a house. I would buy you a house. And if I had $1 million,
stocks, jocks,
stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control.
Here, right now. Right here, right now, right now.
We are live.
Hello and welcome back to Stocks and Jacks. I'm Tom Howell. Jim Lawler on the board. SP Futures up 13. NASDAQ Futures up 69. Up, up we go. Narrow, but up we go. Do we have Professor Lou?
Good morning, sir.
How are you, bud? Missed you last week. I hope everything worked out all right wherever you went.
Yeah, I was first time I've done a sort of almost cross-country drive in a while. So driving from the East Coast back to Denver. And
that's a ways.
You know, it's a little bit of a ways, and got to a drive I hadn't made in a while, and got to experience the the incredible diversity of geography. You know, that I was going from Virginia across the Appalachians on I-64, which is, I think, next to the drive through on 70 and 80 through the Rockies, is probably is one of the prettiest interstate drives there is.
It's that's not the one that got wrecked by the hurricane. It was further north, right?
I think so. I don't. 64 was, as I understand it, was not shut down. I think the one you're talking about that got washed out was 40 in
yeah,
in
40
that south
Pennsylvania or that, that, Carolina or that, whatever.
Well, that's Carolina, so that's south. But lovely drive. Had good weather. Saw some nice scenery and. You know, the other realization is, man, Kansas is empty.
Yeah. Well, Nebraska's empty, too. Every once in a while you see one of those little bump oil wells or something, and not much there.
No, it's kind of amazing. The Interstate 80, at least, follows the Platte, so that you get to see trees.
Yeah.
There's driving across Kansas, once you clear the Missouri Valley area, it's pretty open terrain.
Actually,
anyway,
actually 80 follows the railroad, which followed the Platte.
Yep.
And when I was reading my book on what nothing like it in the world is, it was the building of the Transcontinental Railroad. All those guys did their surveying essentially by horseback, trying to stay ahead of some arrow coming after their ass, basically. Not disparaging them, just it was a dangerous thing because it was still Indian land. Now, of course, what happened to the Indians wasn't good, but the fact is, it was dangerous for these guys. They surveyed that like in 1840 and 50, they were within like half a mile of what they did with satellites for I-80 in terms of the best place to put the railroad. That's how good those guys were.
So let me give you an even more amazing anecdote. I was in France earlier in the year and went to a Roman aqueduct. It's a UNESCO World Site, and I can't remember the name of the Pont de Garde, I think, is the name of the aqueduct, built by the Romans back in, I think, the 2nd or 3rd century, and it's an aqueduct, so it's carrying water. It's this fantastic multi-tiered structure, 100 yards across that.
Oh, is that wide? Is that wide? Wow.
Yeah, that carries a pipe. They built this incredible structure just to carry a water pipe from a natural spring to this Roman village near the Rhone.
What's the pipe made out of?
The pipe's made out of lead.
Okay, I was going to say it had to be lead, huh?
Yeah, so the pipe runs for 50 kilometers, 36 miles, and there's no pump, so it's all gravity feed. So they ran a pipe from this spring to this Roman village across this ridge, two ridge lines, and the vertical drop over 36 miles was about 15 yards. So, and the way they measured it, because again, it has to be a downhill slope, you know, pretty much all the way. They measured it by using this device that looks like a sawhorse. It's about, you know, 8 to 10 feet long, and it's got a water tube in the, you know, along the length of it, and it, you know, basically a level, a 10-foot level. And they would place this thing, they started at the spring, and they placed this thing on the ground, and then they moved, you know, they put one end of it on the spring, and then they take the other end and they move it around until they get a downward bubble indication. And then they mark that spot. And then from there, they do another 10-foot measurement. And then from there, they do another 10-foot measurement. And they do that for 36 miles.
It's unbelievable.
And when NASA, I had a classmate who was involved in one of these missions. When NASA put the space shuttle up, one of the first things, the missions they had was something called a radar lab, where they had a very high resolution radar system in the bed of the space shuttle, and it basically radar mapped, you know, the entire world down to a resolution of height variation of 6 inches. So this radar map gives you this incredible, you know, depth, height, 3D resolution of the Earth. And so somebody had the bright idea of running a computer simulation and said, all right, let's see how good these Romans actually were. We're going to have the computer map the best course for this pipe based on this space mapping data. And the computer maps it out, and it is virtually identical to what the Romans did with this.
That's unbelievable.
Sawhorse. It actually is unbelievable, and it just convinces me again that the Romans were geniuses, and one of the reasons that they call it the Dark Ages is that the Western Europe was unable to replicate this kind of thing until almost 1,000 years after the fall of the Roman Empire.
Yeah, I think it was pretty close to 1,000 years.
Yeah, and so, you know, the Dark Ages, there was progress and stuff going on during the Dark Ages, but it took them almost 1,000 years to get back to where the Romans were in terms of technical expertise, and we've only just recently discovered how to make Roman concrete and the secret of it, and in terms of its ability.
The secret was the volcanic ash.
Well, the secret. That? No, the latest thing I read on this was that, you know, they couldn't figure out how the stuff lasted so long. Because Roman concrete was almost indestructible,
especially underwater.
Yeah,
I mean, so you could put, if it was, the waves could be banging against it for like 8,000 years, and it still was okay.
Exactly. So what they discovered was that the mix that the Romans had, and of course they this was all trial and error because they didn't have microscopes or anything like that. The mix that the Romans used created these little bubbles of lime and limestone within the concrete. And as the concrete would flex as it got used, and that after it set, it would flex. And typically this flexing would cause it ultimately to crack and then eventually to fail. But these bubbles of limestone that they had mixed in with the concrete actually would absorb moisture, and they would expand. And so as these cracks developed, you would have these expanding little pockets at an almost microscopic level, these expanding little pockets of limestone that would seal these cracks and greatly extend the life of the concrete itself.
I thought it somehow had to do with some of the aggregate had some volcanic ash in it or something.
I'm sure that's the case, and that may have contained the limestone or stone expansion bubbles that they were talking about.
Whenever you say something like this, you bring up a million questions in my feeble brain. How did they manufacture, transport, and join the pipe in the field?
Well, they did it with horses.
I mean, if you brought two pieces up there, how did you
in terms of sealing it?
Yeah.
They would use pitch or tar. And then hammer it together, smear it with that. They regularly.
So lead is malleable enough for you to pound on it, and lead
doesn't dissolve in water, so they're not as long as they're just putting water through there, they're not poisoning themselves. The system that they had, they had a regular inspection. They built inspection ports along the pipeline, the length of the pipeline, so that you could go up and check it on a regular basis.
How big was this spring that they could drain that kind of water out of it?
I never saw the spring, so I don't know what the flow was, but the pipe was capable, I think, of carrying something like 40 to 50 gallons a second. You know, it was like a 15 or 16 inch pipe.
And what causes the lead poisoning? Was when impurities in the water actually do react to the lead?
Yeah, or when they were cooking with it. You know, once they started.
Because one of the theories of the degrading of the Roman Empire, if you take away the
if you take away the
bubonic plague from the rats from the catastrophe, was lead, correct?
Yeah, that's right. But they used lead for cooking, you know, their pots and things like that. And once you start doing that, you start heating it, you start putting, you know, vinegar and oils and all this other stuff in there, that will leach out some of the lead and get it into your food. That was the problem with Flint, Michigan.
Yeah.
You know, the pipes in Flint, Michigan were lead, and it wasn't a problem until they started adding chemicals into the water.
Right.
And that, you know, that leached the lead out and pumped it into the water system.
Hey, Lou, on the thing that happened yesterday, this poor guy getting shot, when you listen to, you know, essentially the morons on TV, because I'm going to ask questions, I'm not going to try and say what I know, because I don't know anything about it other than the fact the poor guy's dead. When you have a situation like this, where it appears there was a lone guy, I think one shot, pretty damn accurate,
200 yards,
and now the guy's in the wind, you're going to have a bunch of morons already talking about who it was, and anybody who has a gun, anybody can do this. And I hearken back to one of my favorite books, but much educational books. There just was a movie on it, The Day of the Jackal. And when you do something like this, I mean, if you're a, you know, again, I'm just going on with what I've come to know. If you're just some idiot that wants to make a name for himself and walk up and shoot Reagan, where you know you're going to get caught or shot, one or the other, that is relatively easy, and very hard to defend, because the person doesn't care if he survives. Yet in the Jackal, the guy wanted to survive. So the amount of preparation, the amount of time, the amount of pacing off, knowing in advance where the De Gaulle was going to be, knowing what the building was, knowing how far... It was about a six-month project for a guy who really knew what the hell he was doing. The difference between that and anybody can run up and shoot anybody, to me, is light years away. And yet everybody's talking like anybody could do this. Oh, yeah, any old hunter that has a sight can go to... I don't think so, Lou. This seems to me to be... The fact that he got himself out of there, that is a 100 times harder project, if you want to call it killing a project, than not caring, or you wanted everybody to know you, cause so you'd be known in history forever. I mean, what is your make of that? This has to be almost like a paid assassin, for God's sake.
Well, the thing that, okay, first of all, so we know that the improbable of a single shooter who's not a professional is possible, because we saw that with Trump a year ago. You know, that kid who crawled to the top of that building in Butler and got himself set up.
But he was on film all over the damn place. I mean,
but notwithstanding the security, so it's possible for a confluence of events like that to occur with a non-professional. The thing that is getting to that spot and
getting away,
So Kirk is not surrounded by heavy security. So the reason you would do a long range shot like that is A, the guy's surrounded by such security that you're not going to get a pistol, because if all you want to do is kill him and you don't care about what happens to yourself, you want to get closer. If you are confronted by security, you take the long range shot. That was not this case. That somebody could have smuggled a pistol into that venue, I think, fairly readily, if they wanted to.
There were just all a million students running around, for God's sake. But I didn't realize that place has 46,000 students. I never even heard of it.
Yeah, Utah Valley.
Yeah.
Obviously what this guy wanted to do was get away. So the shot is taken from a distance, as far as we can tell. Now I've even seen some speculation that there may have been two shooters.
But there was only one shot, right? Or was there?
There was only one shot, but it may have been coming from a different angle. In other words, the person that they saw on top of the roof was not the actual shooter. It was somebody else. But notwithstanding that, long range shot, this person wanted to get away. They wanted to conceal their identity. They wanted to make a clean escape. That is what sort of speaks to me that this is something that was not, spur of the moment. This was planned out, well thought out. Apparently, there's an interstate exit, like 3 or 4 minutes from the parking lot of the building where they thought the guy fired from. So, he could have been on the ground. He shoots. He runs back. Climbs down from the building, jumps into his car, drives away. He's on the interstate and gone.
If I could make a minor bet, I'll bet you that gun and what he was wearing is still buried in the building somewhere.
Could well be. And we'll see. We'll just have to see. I mean, we don't know anything.
I wasn't going to speculate, but yeah, doesn't sound like he was running across the area carrying the gun. He probably would have been seen.
A huge part of the problem is that people assumed it was a close-in shooter, because some old white guy that I saw, the first guy they picked up, yelled, arrest me, I'm the shooter,
really?
I'm the shooter, or something like that.
Where does that come from?
I don't know, but they grabbed him. He was grabbed immediately, and my understanding was he self-identified.
That was the person of interest they were talking about?
Yep.
Okay.
And so my first thought was, if this is really, really well planned, you have somebody in the crowd who's a decoy, who yells, it's
how
me.
How much do you pay that guy? Me. Or do you get some lunatic?
Well, I mean, but in any event, they thought they had the guy right away. And when they realized they didn't, that's when they started broadening the search. Well, by that time, the shooter's long gone. So, again, what strikes me about this is the amount of pre-planning that must have gone into escape route.
This is a day of the jackal kind of thing.
Avoiding surveillance cameras, knowing where the cameras were on campus, figuring out a way to get out of there without, and the guy on top of the building was in a dark, wearing dark clothing, and somebody said, well, that's not conducive to escape and evasion in daylight. And I said, well, but it is conducive if you're wearing a dark coverall. You roll over, you unzip it, you climb out of it, and now you're in light-colored clothing. You let everybody see you in dark-covered clothing. You get rid of that, and then you're in light-covered clothing.
But none of that's been found. No brass, no gun, no clothes.
We don't know.
Right.
We don't know. So... my thought is that this was pretty well planned, we don't know what the story was. Kirk was the Ukrainian government had listed Kirk as a pro-Russian sympathizer on its way, you know, identified him as one of the Americans that was pro-Russian. Did somebody take that as a license to shoot him? Was this a hit done by a foreign government?
That would be shuddering it.
Yeah, but it's not. I mean, we know the Iranians were going after Trump last year. So, and again, this.
Well, the Israelis don't seem to mind going in somebody else's country and killing people.
Well, yeah, I mean, if they're a terrorist, I don't think Kirk was considered a a terrorist.
I mean, I know a little bit about the guy except what I've read the last couple of days, but I think a lot of his points of view didn't align with mine. But the guy worked hard at it, went around and engaged people. I didn't have a problem with him. Why would anybody? I mean,
he was actually fairly conservative, but an absolute genius at engaging people and engaging with people. And that's what he was doing at Utah Valley. He makes appearances. If you get on YouTube, you can find his appearances all over. His thing, in addition to organizing a huge and successful political mobilization committee, Turning Point USA, his specialty was going onto college campuses and debating. I mean, just exactly what he was doing yesterday. He was sitting in a forum with a microphone and engaging students in discussion, and you know, he was giving his point of view. He did this on college campuses. He did it at open forums. He apparently had a fantastic performance at Oxford.
Did you catch his quote about guns?
I don't know what he said about guns.
This is, I'm not going to say this is a conservative piece of stupidity, but this is a 31-year-old male piece of stupidity where you literally think you are bulletproof and it's never going to be you. Lou, this is eerie. You'll never live in a society when you have an armed citizenry and you won't have a single gun death. I think it's worth it. I think it's worth to have the cost of, unfortunately, some gun deaths every single year so that we can have the Second Amendment to protect our God-given rights. That's a prudent deal. It's rational.
Okay.
Is that scary or what?
Well...
But you never think it's going to be you, do you, when you say something dumb like
no,
that?
No, but I don't know if he thought that. I know that he and his family have had multiple death threats, and he's been targeted by, and you saw, incredibly, you saw, you know, a lot of zeal for his murder expressed. I mean, MSNBC just fired one of their lead commentators for basically saying he asked for it.
When you have this kind of an attitude about that, it's like, you know, I'm not. As I think you know, I think this is a horrendous thing that should never hit. But it's sort of like talking to some, you know, young idiot, not all young, where to say, I always drive 85 miles an hour, it's never going to be me. Well, okay then. So, you know, what did Hemingway say? You don't ask for who the bell tolls, it tolls for you?
Well, right. But I mean, the context of what he was saying, at least as I understand it, is that we could have perfect public safety. We could you know, we accept in this culture and in any culture, we accept as a price for modern convenience or for certain freedoms, we accept that there's going to be a social cost imposed for those freedoms because there is an element that is not going to be responsible in exercising those freedoms. So one of the things that we deal with in terms of freedom of speech is the proliferation of what I consider to be, you know, pornographic images. We accept that. That's a social cost. We accept whatever it is, 30,000 deaths a year and multiple injuries on the highways, because we're not going to turn into, we don't put speed cameras and license plate readers up in everywhere. We accept.
Well, maybe we should.
In Chicago, you guys accept 300, 400, 500 murders a year, and you turn down ShotSpotter technology because you don't like the fact that it results in
when you say I don't like that.
You're a Chicago resident.
All right, so what am I supposed to do?
You voted for it.
I don't like the fact that every moron in the country has 25 guns. I mean,
I'm just,
I know to try and tell the next guy he can't buy a gun at this
point.
I'm just saying
his point is that the Second Amendment imposes, in exchange for having the ability to defend yourself, you have to accept the fact that there's going to be an element that is not going to simply use those weapons to defend themselves, but are going to use them to kill other people. And that's his point. And I understand.
I get that. What I'm saying, Louis, you were 31 once. It was never going to be you or me. We were all the same at that age, right?
I don't know. I was not quite the same,
but you don't have
any kids. Let me just tell you that once you get kids, your sense of mortality starts to come home a little bit.
I have family. I have nephews. I have God-killed children. So I mean, it's not the same, but it's not that far off either. I have 4 godchildren.
Okay, but you didn't bring them home from the hospital.
No. But
I'll tell you, I was there the day they
showed up, though. I mean,
I'll tell you, that's one of the most frightening events in my life. This is the first time I brought my oldest home from the hospital as a baby, and I'm going, oh man, what am I going to do? And your sense of mortality and responsibility changes dramatically when you become a parent. So I don't, you know, 31 is not 21.
Okay, but I'm saying I am amazingly sorry to the guy, and I can't believe that. I just hope this isn't some. I don't even know who I hope the guy is. Because I mean, I don't want things to be inflamed. I don't want him to be foreign. I wish he didn't exist, the guy that shot him out. There's no safe harbor here. It's not like, you know, it's some loser in somebody's basement watching either left or right wing TV and running out and shooting somebody, where you can say, well, there's, you know, that's just a moron. I don't think this is, and it's got me more afraid. Am I right being more afraid? I think I am.
This doesn't look like that. And you know, who knows? We don't know. But the guy in Butler, that whose body was cremated 10 days after the murder attempt on the president, I mean, we'll never know what that guy was thinking, and who he was. I don't want to speculate on this. This could just as easily, and I'm sure somebody has already floated this idea. Since we don't know anything, this could just as easily be some right wing guy who's trying to inflame the population.
By shooting a public figure. We got to break it. Let me ask you this, and I know you're not.
Speaking of security, I want to bust the Secret Service's chops for allowing a bunch of nitwits into that restaurant that Donald Trump was dining at on Tuesday night. And I don't understand how that was allowed.
Well, I didn't hear about that.
Oh, yeah, Code Pink.
Let's go to break. But when we come back, when Clinton used to go out a lot, so did Bush. What is the protocol when a president goes to the restaurant? You don't close it, but what do you do?
Well, sometimes they do close it. And
well, what do you do? Pay for everybody who's supposed to
but
be
you
there?
Do when you do, or when they do that kind of sort of spontaneous public appearance, you flood the place with agents, and the minute it looks like something's about to happen, you get people out of there.
So the 10 of the other tables are actually Secret Service people who made reservations too?
Could be, although I don't think so. I think this was fairly spontaneous, but they were very slow to react when these people stood up and started yelling, you know, free Palestine and you're a genocidal maniac and you're Hitler and a bunch of other stuff. They've got every right to do that. I just don't want them doing it within 15 feet of a guy who's already been tried to be killed twice.
You know what, Lou, this is one of the reasons why I kind of like, I mean, I like Chicago. I don't know what's happening to it. I was in New York once, mind my own business, my first time out there. I'm walking along Fifth Avenue. I'd never seen Fifth Avenue. I'm going, wow, this is pretty neat. And all of a sudden, I see this bunch of people standing there. And there's a store across the street. And I go, hey, what's going on? And they go, well, you know, suppose our producer was a celebrity. Jim Lawler's in the store. And I go, so what? It was like somebody was on TV. I go, so what? What do you mean, so what? We can't wait to see him. You see him on TV every week. Let the guy alone. I mean, in Chicago, I've been in 50 restaurants where I walk in and there's a guy who's on Chicago PD, there's a guy who's on ER, there's somebody there. Nobody bothers the person. Is this a phenomenon of other places that, I mean, I have political differences with Trump, and if a guy was having dinner next to me, I would never jump up and start yelling at him. Why would I? He's having dinner, so am I.
I mean, I don't know. I do know in Washington, D.C., the protocol was when you saw famous people, you sort of, you know, tacitly maybe tip your hat to them or nod or smile at them or whatever. But you don't go, oh my God, you know. I came out of a show at the Kennedy Center to go get some stuffed toys for my kids because we were watching Cinderella. And I'm walking out and I literally walk into Condoleezza Rice, who is there with her two Secret Service people. And she's walking out as I'm walking out. And I always
really liked her.
I said, Madam Secretary, I hope you're enjoying the show. And she said, it's wonderful. And I said, have a good evening. And I just walked on. And that's sort of the protocol for those kinds of things.
Well, I was in the Crow's Nest Bar in the Willard or something bar, where there's a big round window in the front where you can see who's pulling up in their horse carriage. So if you didn't want to talk to them, you could duck out the back stairs. It's an interesting little spot. So I'm sitting there having a cocktail after one of our board meetings. And who's sitting next to me but your buddy, Newt.
Yep.
Newton and some couple, they're sitting there. There's no guards. There's no nothing. I'll tell you what, I don't think I've ever seen a guy who looks exactly in person like he does on TV. I mean, most people kind of don't, right? I mean, you know, because you got makeup and all that stuff on TV. God, he was, you looked at him and you go, it's Newt Gingrich. The thought never crossed your mind that it was anybody. He looked exactly like the same haircut, the same
and
everything.
Maybe, you know, TV personalities are different. I guarantee you, if you were to dump Lady Gaga or I don't even know who, you know, Taylor Swift into a restaurant in Chicago, there'd be a stampede.
Oh yeah, but Taylor Swift more than anybody else, probably, for God's sake.
So it sort of depends on who it is. I don't, but the idea of just personality is not a. Yeah, I don't know what the protocol would be. I don't know why people in New York would be excited about seeing Jim Lawler.
Yeah, I mean, I'm excited every morning when I see him when he drives me. Well, why don't we go to break and we let him do his sports report? SP Futures now. Get a load of this. Speaking of lawlessness, there was a double rollover crash this morning at Michigan and Ohio where six people are like. Do you think they were going 30 miles an hour, Lou? I'm going to take the over on that. What do you think?
A rollover on Michigan.
Oh, two cars rolled over, not one, two.
Were they shooting at each other?
No, I don't think so. I mean,
that was a part of the report.
Could very well have been. SP Futures up 13. NASDAQ Futures up 66. Going to talk a little bit about Oracle stuff. We got CPI today as well, but all this other stuff is superseding that since we have Lou. Be right back. Stocks and Jacks.
Hello, this is Tom Howe, the Chief. I think most of you know that I'm also the Chief Investment Officer at PTI Securities and Futures. There we invest for and help a wide variety of clients. And you know what? No two are the same. Some have legacy stocks, some concentration issues, some maybe embedded tax issues. The others might need or want some portfolio protection. There could be estate issues or maybe new family members. The point is that we are all unique and the portfolios should match. However, the last several years have seen a relatively one-way market. It seemed that all we needed was to be all in. No protection, no fixed income, just be all in, no matter who you are, what your risk profile or age. Most management firms love that. Take this and like it, no matter who you are. Be careful with that. You are not everybody. I think most see the market view going forward as maybe different than the one looking back, so your portfolio should reflect that. Maybe just as simple as your life station has changed. Towards that end, we are accepting some new clients needing a more personal approach and are interested in negotiating the future and not with a portfolio designed for the past. Find me at 312-663-4310. That's 312-663-4310.
Hi, I'm Audrey Johnson, an owner of HomeSource Realty and a frequent contributor to Stocks and Jocks. If you're nervous about the stock market and considering diversification, or are looking for a rate of return way better than your bank's, consider adding rental properties to your portfolio. Whether it's a condo, single family, or multi-unit building, I can help you select a property that meets your financial needs. Call or text me at 708-349-3456. That's 708-349-3456. Or visit my website at myhomesourcerealty.com. That's myhomesourcerealty.com.
Stocks, jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control.
Here, right now, right here, right now, right now.
We're back.
Low and Rough Stocks and Jocks. I'm Tom Allen, Jim Lower on the board. SP Futures up 13. And the futures up 66. But a stock that was the big mover yesterday was Oracle. Was up like 80-some bucks. It's up another 6 today. Stock was up 100 hours at one point. The straddle was $22. So the stock moved almost 5 times what the market thought the movement was going to be on earnings. It's I don't know what that says, but I think it's a warning, but again, who knows? I also wish I'd have been long Oracle. I had a few clients that were. Can't say as I put them in there, but they were in there. Over in Europe, we got the DAX up 64, that's 0.3%. FTSE up 49.5. CAC around up 69, that's 0.9. So we got some bullishness over there. We're in Asia, Nikkei up 534, 1.2%. That's another big move in the Nikkei. Hang Seng down 113.4%. Shanghai up 63, 1.6%. Japanese are pouring some money back into the system, and it's heading right into their market. 10-year yield 4.05, up 2 basis points. That was down again yesterday. We have the CPI this morning. If it comes in okay, I guess you could pretty much count on the Fed making a 25% rate cut, 0.25% rate cut, maybe 0.5 in a week. Trump will be all over him, of course. Japan down 2 basis points, 1.58. We have oil. Guess what? It's pretty much stuck on, was over 63 yesterday. Now it's 62.92. Is it vigorously moves back and forth from 63 like a dollar? I've never seen oil quite this quiet. Brent down 72 cents, 66.77. Natural gas down 2 cents, 305. I mean, it's up 2 cents. Gold, which has been on a tear, is actually down 24 bucks today, 36.57. But that's what it's rarefied air for gold. Silver down 6 cents, it's 41.54. Foreign exchange, dollar pretty much steady, although the euro was 117, now it's 116.81. The dollar is actually a little stronger from yesterday morning. British pound, same way, 135.17. Crypto, up 5.95. We're back up to 114. We were, we had been down. We were up a lot. We were at 120 at one point. Then get down to 110. Now we're back to 114. Jimmy, we had a forced traffic weather sports. Cubs win.
Yes, Cubs did win. They beat the Braves 3-2. The Diamondbacks beat the Giants 5-3. The White Sox beat the Rays 5-6. In Chicago, right now it's 60 degrees with a high of 76. We're both going to have sunshine and some clouds, and partly cloudy and 61 tonight. In Phoenix, it's 81 degrees with a high of 104. Again, mostly sunny and hot and less humid with a clear night of 83. On the traffic front, we have the inbound Kennedy from... Give me a second while the site updates here. The inbound Kennedy from O'Hare is at 48. The inbound from Montrose is at 22. Outbound Kennedy is at 16 from Montrose. And the outbound from the Ohio feeder ramp is at 4. Now, the The inbound Eisenhower is at 48 from the Jane Brown interchange. The inbound Eisenhower from Wolf is at 36. The outbound from the Jane Byrne interchange is at 36. The in outbound from the Wolf is 25. The Dan Ryan is running at 18 minutes inbound from the Jane Byrne interchange. The outbound is running at 11 minutes. And the Stevenson, if anybody is interested, is running at 48 minutes on the inbound from the Dan Ryan, and the outbound is at 23. And I will say something to both you and Lou. Having been to the Middle East, I went to a place called Masada, which is a plateau in the Dead Sea.
There was a movie about that.
Right. It's a plateau in the Dead Sea, and there is an aqueduct, and Lou is correct. Now, aqueduct literally does mean water bridge. The Romans built a wall around the plateau and then built an aqueduct because obviously you can't use the water from the Dead Sea. And back to you, Chief.
Did you plunk yourself in the Dead Sea?
Actually, I did, and it's pretty disgusting.
It is disgusting. Let me just say real quick, that water that was run through that aqueduct was then diverted in this town so that the villas that the Romans built for themselves all had running water. And when I say running water, I mean water was diverted so it ran through their houses. They had a central area where you had fresh water coming in that they could use for cooking. And then they had a bathroom. They had bathrooms that had water running through the bathroom so that your waste would be disposed of. And they cleared it out, ran it out all the way through the town. So again, highly advanced culture in so many ways.
What's more disgusting, the Dead Sea or Great Salt Lake? Nothing can live in either one, right?
Well, there are brine shrimp in Great Salt Lake, I know.
Okay.
I don't know about the Dead Sea, but I know there are brine shrimp in the Great Salt Lake.
What the hell is a brine shrimp?
Shrimp that can live in heavily salted water. There is nothing that lives in the Dead Sea, and it's sort of like, I guess the best way I would put it is dipping yourself into oil.
Yeah.
It is very, now, considered very therapeutic, and yes, like the Great Salt Lake, you do float.
I would think you'd bob like a cork, but anyway. So, Lou, when you were driving cross country, you know, it's funny, if you were I don't think I'd ever be an author, but if you were somebody that, if I popped some LSD and became an author, Jimmy and I driving in this morning, just two or three traffic incidents crossing the Eisenhower and people's attitude and the fingers flying, I'm not so sure that you couldn't put a correlation between all this stuff and the murders. I don't think it's one subject, Lou. I mean, people are going crazy.
Well, Jonathan Turley, who is an attorney, law professor, who I follow pretty closely because he's reasonably moderate, refers as a column about what he calls the age of rage. And just says that people are politically anyway so heavily polarized and emotional about their affiliations and their positions, and this is translated into a lot of anger, and he documents all this in several of his books, but he is talking about the fact that public expressions of emotion, especially rage, are on the rise and seem to be just below the surface with everybody now.
I would think.
I don't know if that's correct, but or the other alternative is that we're just getting older and turning into a culture of grumpy old people.
These people aren't old. It's the young people that seem to well, whatever. Hey, you know, I'm gonna take a leap here, and again, we're trying to grasp at straws on this poor guy getting shot. How would you know from that distance that you had killed the guy? We would just be only one. I've never shot a gun like that. This is all news to me.
Well, so I was. It's funny you would say that. I mean, one of the things I was doing when I was out in Virginia was, I went shooting with a friend, and he had a deer rifle, and I haven't fired a .30-06 in ages, but it had a very good scope on it. So we're shooting at a target about 100 yards away. And, you know, with the magnification on the scope and the crosshairs, I mean, it was almost like I was shooting at something, you know, 20 feet in front of me. So you can tell if you hit the target. Now, you may not be able to tell exactly where you hit them, but if you're looking through the scope, you fire the shot, you'll see the 200 yards, the bullet's going to be there almost immediately. I think the supposition was they fired probably from like a hunting rifle, a larger, not a like an AR-15 kind of weapon, but but something with a heavier caliber, like a 30 caliber or something like that.
If I'm right in my estimation, this is more like a Day in the Jackal hit than a... I'll bet you would find that the day his schedule on these universities was published, within 2 or 3 days, if you look, say there's 10 campuses on there, I'll bet if you look at all the different cameras, if you could find them, if somebody could get it together and hit AI, maybe you could do it, you're going to find somebody within a few days' time scoping out every single one of these places and finding out.
Oh, I'm absolutely convinced with using Google Maps and Street View that they could take a look and say, okay, here's probably the best place to do the shot.
No, but I'm talking about you might find the same guy scoped out the next three places he was going to be and pick this as the easiest one. Because this looked pretty easy, a big open air thing, and there was a building facing right at the guy, right?
I think this was the easiest one, or the optimal choice for a number of reasons, not the least of which, again, was the interstate being right there, and being able to get away quickly.
Well, yeah, you got to get to the interstate, right?
Yeah, but he's the parking lot. The interstate runs right through the university, or right next to the university.
Oh, really? Okay.
I mean, it's a three minute.
Did you even hear of this place? I didn't. It's got 46. It's the biggest university in Utah.
Yeah, I was not aware of it. In any event, I'm guessing with a scope, you can pretty readily tell that you hit your target.
With this, the Israelis taking out these guys in Qatar. If you take this to its logical thing. Suppose President Trump actually, he's trying, I think. Suppose he has three people from Hamas and talks to them in the White House. Does that mean the Israelis can bomb the White House?
No.
That
would be a disproportionate hit. Now if... So the issue... Here's the precedent for this kind of thing. International law allows you to attack non-state actors that are being sheltered by a third country, and allows you to violate the sovereignty in a limited way to take those people out. If you want a historical precedent for this, we did this with Pancho Villa. We did it, of course, throughout the Middle East with our drone assassinations under Bush, Obama, and Trump. We did it when we got bin Laden. So the short answer is, if you're harboring these people,
this sounds like one of those deals where the people with the power write the rules.
Well, it's a recognition that under international law recognizes that we are not, the code is not going to authorize one state harboring terrorists that attack another state without giving the target state something to do, or the ability to do something about it. And so this kind of action has long been recognized, again, as long as it's proportional and not excessive.
Were these guys there for talks, or were they being harbored?
They were being harbored. They live there.
Okay.
They live in that hotel. They siphon off some of the millions of dollars in aid that were being given to Hamas to support their lifestyle there. And Israel had made noises like this for some time, that these guys should not consider, the fact that they're in Qatar, should not consider that a sanctuary. And by the way, I think it's quite likely that the Qataris were at least aware that the Israelis were going to make this hit and probably sanctioned it.
Okay.
And
I pretty much suspect the rest of the Arab world did as well. One of these days, we always seem to have so much to talk about a little bit. My guys Andrew and Wayne sent me this thing a while back regarding, of course, Trump's on it, which I will lay off today. But it has to do with people in power that have siphoned all kinds of money away from their country. And of course, the lead knave is Putin, and this is an international group. I don't know who the hell they are, and they try and keep track of this, which I don't know how in God's name you do.
You can't believe how much money has been siphoned out of Russia.
They got.
I mean, when I was there, when I was working there,
they got Putin.
I was appalled.
They got Putin at $1 trillion.
Yeah.
But the other part is the top. Well, they think Trump's already up $7 billion since he's in office. But we'll leave that for another day. But some of the guys on their loop, I couldn't believe it was the guy who used to be the idiot in Yemen. I always thought Yemen didn't have a pot to piss in. This guy's up like $30 billion in Swiss banks or something. I mean, these places that don't seem to have anything, somebody's stealing something. I'm reading this list and I'm going, they must have an extra two zeros on these numbers, but evidently not. Somebody's place,
you read that and you go, we're in the wrong. You and I are in the wrong business.
Yeah, I mean, how do you siphon? The guy from Uganda is up like $3 billion or something.
Well, what did they think Arafat and his family?
Oh, I think he wasn't on the list, but I think he did pretty well.
Oh, they did. They did really well. It's astounding. Well, of course, that was Russia was a sieve and still is, but that was the issue when Russia initially invaded Ukraine and their tires on their trucks started falling apart and their service members were being issued rations that had expired 16 years ago. And everybody's going, what happened? Well, the money that they had dumped into their defense budget for new tires, new rations, new uniforms, new weapons, training, all of that had been siphoned off by various officials within the defense, the Ministry of Defense. And that's one of the reasons why Putin's done some serious house cleaning there. Which is a nice little segue into, I don't have an explanation for what the Russians were doing launching drones into Poland, except to send a message to NATO.
Okay, but that, when you say that, I went and looked at the map, Lou, knowing we were going to talk about it. You got to come all the way through Ukraine to get to Poland, right?
Oh, well, yeah. And if you look at the routes, I mean, the key for me, the first time when I heard about it initially, I thought, well, it's probably the result of jamming in Ukraine, where they've jammed the navigation capabilities of those drones and they've wandered off course.
It's how many hundred miles from Russia through Ukraine to Poland?
But if you're launching attacks into Western Ukraine, and they did, then if you jam the navigation systems, it's possible those things could wander into Poland.
Okay.
But that's not what happened. If you look at the routes they flew programmed routes designed specifically to stimulate air defense so that the Russians could get a good look at what the air defense systems look like. They also were designed, I think, to basically tell NATO, listen, you have absolutely no defense against this. If you're going to put fighters up firing, you know, $500,000 missiles to shoot down $10,000 drones, we can flood your country with these drones.
And they're getting them where? Are these all from Korea?
The Russians are making them themselves now, but they're buying them from Iran and from North Korea and from China.
Well, the other way to get to Poland, this is my one look at the map, where does Belarus stand in all this?
Well, Belarus is a very tight Russian ally, and they're having a huge major joint Belarus called Zapad, which means west in Russian. They're having a huge military exercise between Belarus and Russian forces right now, and supposedly the Russians are building an intermediate range ballistic missile facility in Belarus to bring. To bring Europe within easy striking range of this new generation of IRBMs. So the Russians never underestimate the capacity of the Russians to withstand what any other Western democracy would revolt at.
Where would you put the spending right now? And because Russia. Obviously, they still got oil getting through to India in a few places. You know, Trump's getting nowhere with his, wanting Europe to tax India and so forth and everything. I mean, I don't know. Let's not go into that. But the point being, where would you put the capabilities now of the pretty much deflated Russia? I mean, you were the one who was telling us about they can't get roller bearings for the trains. The trains aren't even running. Versus,
yeah, they've got major issues. Well, there. I mean,
but I mean, where would you put them in regards to the ability of Poland, Germany, France, Britain? I mean, they're even, you know, they've upgraded their, God, one of the best buys this year was the military companies in Germany, for God's sake.
Yeah, Rheinmetall. Yeah.
But the output right now in Europe has to be much superior to Russia, isn't it, or isn't it?
No. The Europeans have allowed that, because again, they're hiding under our skirts. The Europeans have allowed their defense capabilities, but the exception might be France, their defense capabilities to wither. Now they're trying to rebuild them now, but if you're looking at the strongest military right now in Europe is Poland, and the Baltics, and they are in pretty good shape. They've been spending a lot on defense since they came out from under the Iron Curtain, because they know the Russians are going to be back.
But the Russians get no trains, no dough, and by the way, they're spending money every single day. They got to be on a drain here somewhere.
And they've had a million casualties, Chief. You know, dead and wounded. I don't know.
How are they taking care of the wounded? Are they just killing them, or what are they doing to them?
Well, the wounded in Russia, it's a lousy, terrible healthcare situation. They are using these meat grinder attacks. Really, what they're trying to do, I mean, the strategy right now is to hold on to what they've taken so far, continue to degrade Ukraine so that the Ukrainians can't mount any kind of counteroffensive, and just grind down Ukrainian manpower. The Ukrainians are running out of people too. Grind down Ukrainian manpower, grind down Ukrainian capability, and then maybe negotiate a ceasefire, which from the Russian perspective will only last as long as it takes for the Russians to rearm.
Yeah, I don't know how you can...
And that's where this is headed.
Even if there's, quote, a real deal, an actual peace, not a ceasefire, I wouldn't trust those guys. Why would you?
No. Well, no. No. They're not without a complete change in culture and history. As you know, I love Russian culture. I'm a huge fan of the history. I love the literature. I love the music. But I'm under no illusions about the nature of that political system and the kind of avaricious, you know, grasping that it has generated historically.
Even if Putin went, you don't think it'd be that big of a deal difference?
No, you'd have a new generation of guys in there that might be actually a little bit smarter about expanding the empire. But they are an empire driven.
The thing's big enough for
culture.
God's sake.
Remember, don't forget that they also have, historically, the Russians also have a worldview that puts them in as the spiritual saviors of the West. I know that sounds crazy, but
Somebody may have to do it the way we're going, but I don't think it's them.
Very much an element in their worldview.
Anyway, Lou, so what do you got going this weekend? By the way, when you did your trip, were you like Will Chamberlain that tried to do it in 12 hours, going 100 miles an hour the whole way?
I didn't go 100 miles an hour, but I was trying to get as far as I could. But I can't do the 18-hour drives anymore.
No, my limit's probably 10. No, I used to be 12, and I'm not doing that.
Yeah, I used to do 16 and a half hours nonstop from Chicago to Colorado Springs, and I can't do that anymore.
Was your lovely bride with you or by yourself?
No, she was with me for part of it. And then I did the rest of it by myself.
She dumped you halfway?
Dumped me halfway.
I hate it when that happens.
That's right.
All right,
you take care of yourself.
All right. That's because you're up 12, Naz, if you're up 67. Do we have our guys?
Yes, we do.
Yes, you do.
And I'll bet you thought that I forgot about that thing you sent me with all the people that have stolen all the monies from these countries. I don't forget anything you guys send me.
And you know what? They are still stealing money.
and they're long gone, these places.
Some of them are, yeah. But they've been replaced by other autocrats, dictators, whatnot. There's no shortage of them in the world today. As a matter of fact, a lot of those guys were at that big whatever they had, the 80th anniversary of the victory over Japan. That big party for dictators in China recently.
Oh yeah,
yeah. Those guys are dipping into their treasuries like, you know, there's no tomorrow.
Well, you know, you guys, when you sent that, I have a friend I haven't seen her in ages, but She does some business with a couple of my clients. And anyway, she has this, I use the term, some kind of a mathematical system. It's a branch of mathematics that I never was any good at. I mean, I was always pretty good at the ones where you come up with an answer. This is kind of the math. It's mathematics like coloring problems, you know, where you're constantly testing one. Where anyway, this one is a way to store information in financial areas. So it has to do more with keeping mathematical stuff than it is making a calculation. Anyway, but the Army or the Armed Forces essentially had a some sort of a X-ray machine, whatever you want to call it, where they could take a picture of a container, and they would be able to tell you not only was something in there was round, they could tell you it was a basketball. So what the United Nations wanted to do under the guise of sports stadiums is they wanted to stop worldwide smuggling. They wanted to be able to take a picture of a container, you know, someplace in Uganda, and when it got to New Orleans, to take a picture, and if it didn't match, they were going to reject it, thinking that some contraband was on there. And in return for this, the country was supposed to give the United Nations enough property for a soccer stadium, hence the sports thing, a hospital, and for a port to do all this stuff, because they didn't trust the country to do it. So in return for, I'll say, 3 square miles of property, maybe 4, they were going to put up this money, and this was going to help stop this worldwide smuggling. They found her, and her system has a capability of essentially storing all the stuff that's on these things. It has, you know, so they gave her a United Nations passport to go to these countries, and they zeroed in on one in Africa, and for whatever reason they were going to start. Now, to do the picture, for the dumb word, of this thing, say it's $1,000 that somebody had to pay, and then at the end in New Orleans it's another $1,000. It might have been more or less. Well, in order for them to get this done, the dictator, wherever the hell he was in this first place, he wanted like $10, and the $10 was going to go into his account in Switzerland directly. And she ended up going, I'm out of here. If it ends up being this corrupt, I know why they're doing it, because they can't get anything done otherwise. If it's this corrupt, I want this guy out of here. I was just there to place as a bleep hole. All because of him, and now we got to pay him to make it better, to put up the soccer stadium in the hospital. But so when I heard that story from her a few years ago, and then you guys sent me that stuff about people they siphon off all this dough.
Oh, and people are getting upset about it. You know, one of the, there's a huge news events around the world not being reported in this country, but in both Nepal and Indonesia, they were millions, well, maybe not Nepal, they don't have that many people, but in Indonesia they do. It's the world's largest, most populous Muslim country. But they've been in the streets in Nepal. They threw out their prime minister and their president, stormed their residences. They're tired of the corruption. They were actually in Kathmandu. They were throwing government ministers into the river. And this is all on social media now. Similar things happening in Indonesia, where they accuse the government of pocketing taxpayers' money. And the people are just... They've had enough.
Where do you guys get all this stuff? I mean, I used to read a lot on Al Jazeera US. Then they went under, so I don't know.
Yeah.
And I used to get the Journal of Political Economy. Boy, that thing's a tough read. Where there's a few pages on like every country in the world. I mean, boy, talk about putting you to sleep. But that has that kind of review, if that thing's even published anymore, of what's going on everywhere. But other than that, how do you dive into where the news is? It just kind of shrivels up.
Well, I've been tossed off of some social media. Zuckerberg got for some reason he didn't think I met their community standards. But I basically TikTok, with all the junk on there, they've got these amazing videos of what's going on in places like Nepal and Indonesia, because people are uploading their own videos of these street protests. I should add Bangladesh into that, and putting it out on TikTok, and it's amazing. This stuff is unfiltered. There's obviously censorship now been imposed in some of these countries, But the scenes are, you know, I've been to both Nepal and Indonesia, and I'm actually watching areas where I spent time, in some cases, up in flames.
Yeah, it's well, what do you? How do you? Andrew, please opine in here. But we were having a discussion over an adult beverage the other night regarding, you know, people in Congress, and the one guy was saying, well, you know, all they're doing is making money. They're all crooks. And I mentioned, I've had this discussion with you guys again, but when we were on the trading floor, the last thing we wanted is to be tarred with any kind of a brush that you're all crooks. So we made absolutely sure, to the best we could, that nobody was a crook. Because the last thing we wanted was for one story to get out there about some trader, you know, screwed some customer on a trade or something. And we made sure that didn't happen, because it was kind of our livelihood. And not kind of, it was our livelihood. And we didn't want to lose it over some idiot, basically. Yet, somehow or another, the Senate, the House, the Oval Office, nobody seems to care. I mean it's, you know, I don't think Dick Durbin is a thief. I don't think Tammy Durbin, I don't know. I don't think, I surely don't think Paul Simon was or Adlai Stevenson was. I wouldn't want to walk into a room where every place I went, he's a senator, he's a crook, and yet somehow they put up with it. Why?
Well, part of it, and good morning.
Hey, good morning.
Is you're attuned to the news, obviously, and what's left of the Chicago newspapers, they would be overwhelmed with stories of corruption. So, and the public is similar. So we're only seeing a small part of it actually show up in any kind of news media translated to voter behavior. So for a lot of these people, the opportunity to make riches versus chance of getting caught or having the voters know about it and throw you out is much less than just following the party and relying on the small chance that you're kicked out, that that you'll get a pardon. So, for example, two of the major Republicans who supported Trump in the first term in the House were convicted. I think one was Collins from the Buffalo area, and the son of Duncan Hunter out in California. And they went through the whole trials. They refused to quit their House seats, even though they were pretty much caught dead to rights. And ultimately, they were convicted, sentenced to prison, and then they were pardoned by Trump. Because
Mr. Attorney, now can they run again for the House if you're pardoned? Is that still a conviction? What is that?
Probably, but the larger point is they've made vast riches, so it's not necessarily worth their while to go back to the House because they made all this money. One, Collins from up the suburban part of Buffalo, he was making insider trades while he was attending a White House function. Remember that? So, you know, it's probably difficult for him to go back to the House, which is not that great a life. He's got a campaign and everything. Plus, he's getting older now. But they run the risk, they get caught, they get pardoned, and so what lesson does that send to the people that are still there?
Well, when you say, sorry for doing this to you, when you say insider trading, it's a term that people have, you know, not been a trader. They think it's a generic term, but it's really not. I mean, if you were to say there's a minimum wage bill coming out, and they're going to absolve whatever island Nancy Pelosi's husband's got his tuna factory on, of the minimum wage. I guess if you're looking out 2 years, you could buy stock in that tuna company, and it's an insider trade because it's information that maybe other people don't have. But it's clearly not the same, in my mind, as knowing that there's going to be a tariff on copper the next day out of the blue, and the copper moves a dollar, which is $24,000 on a one lot. I guess, is information that's, you know, maybe the whole world should know that the guy has a tuna factory out there. Maybe not. I mean, that's kind of the insider information that the market is supposed to be able to absorb, in one man's opinion. The other stuff you can't absorb. I mean, it's insider trading is, I'm going to put a tariff on U.S. Steel tomorrow, and all of a sudden people run out and buy puts in U.S. Steel from the Oval Office. That's an insider trade you can't react to. But I'm saying there's degrees of this, is all I'm trying to say. I think they got nuts there with that, but
yeah. Well, that's why you'd have a trial, and the prosecution would have to prove the elements of it, that it was very specific knowledge, and not just generalized knowledge, but. In the case of the person we were talking about, Chris Collins, he and his son were arrested in 2018, charged with insider trading and making false statements. Even after he was indicted, he kept running for re-election. He was re-elected after he was indicted, convicted, began a 26-month prison sentence, and then he's pardoned.
Now, before I ask you about what the pardon is, because, boy, I've gotten about 8 different opinions from attorneys on what exactly a pardon does, in regards to the insider trading stuff, and I'm sorry to put you through this, Andrew, but It's interesting to me, I guess, and maybe the listeners. How far does the Trump runs out of the can, puts something out on X that he's going to do something, moves the market? Now, I don't know. I may be being facetious here. Maybe I'm not. Maybe it's actually happening that way. How many people know that in advance? How big is how big is the rock in the pond on that one? I mean, it's clearly not going to get to a congressman in 10 minutes, I don't think. Now, somebody in the West Wing maybe could trade ahead of it. Maybe his kids can trade ahead of it. But I don't see how that gets to Collins. And when you say insider trading, remember with the COVID thing where the lady from Alabama, the senator, she walked out of the COVID meeting and sold all her stock because she realized how bad COVID was when nobody else knew. Well, that's another level. I mean, there's but the stuff that I see happening on, like, the copper trade and everything, how far do you think that message goes before they tell Trump to hold on until they make a trade or what?
Well, that's just one type of government. You've simplified this scenario in this hypothetical that Trump is about to do something and his inner circle knows. But Congress would also know some things. They would just independently know whether they're about to investigate. Increasingly, they launch their almost ad hoc investigations of people, entities, businesses, and they would know what the evidence is, whether it's when it's going to come out, and so this is a big problem, particularly because the Office of Congressional Ethics, you know, it's bipartisan, and they try to act like they're getting to the bottom of things, but. Of course, these are elected officials, they're partisan officials, and very often it's a lot of horse trading behind the scenes, and well, we'll drop the charges in this, but go forward in that. And the public never really gets most of the evidence. And in fact, Wayne looked into one of the most notorious cases and kind of brought me into it. And we came to the conclusion that it was an intrigue against the congressperson by staff members and leadership to just basically smear the guy, threaten him with exposure, and force his resignation when is very dubious. So it's...
I would add that the leader of that operation against that member of Congress was good old Rahm Emanuel.
Really?
Yes. Well,
guys, there's a... I'm going to give you 2 points in time here, and I guess is one you know, one of my biggest criticisms of or, you know, maybe compliments, I don't know, to Trump and some of these people in the last, because I think it's progression, it's not just him. It's, were these things, let me tell my story first, and you tell me, were these things, were they conventions, were they house rules? They couldn't possibly have been laws. One of my, I tracked down one of my buddies who's politically connected here in Chicago and still is, and I said, okay, what's the deal? This has to be 80s, guys. And I started doing some stuff on radio, wherever it was. And I said, what's the deal with these guys trading? And he goes, all these guys put their money in a blind trust when they enter Congress. That's what everybody does. And he rattled off a bunch of names. Like, you guys remember the name Marty Russo? He was a several term representative here from Southwest side. He was
vaguely in the far reaches of my memory.
But he sounds familiar. Well, Illinois lost some population, so we lost a district, and he ended up running against the guy in the next district, another Italian guy, that were best friends. They ended up running against each other. I don't think if they're both alive, they talk to this day after that. But this guy, my buddy Doc, he says to me, he doesn't have any money. He's way behind anybody he graduated law school is, it's actually working in his attorney. They were making, at the time, you guys know better than me, $35,000 a year. And he said, you got to keep an apartment in Washington. Of course, they weren't the same price they are now. He goes, you don't make any dough doing that. If he goes to play golf at Beverly's, he's somebody's guest. He can't afford it. And at the same time, you had our senators were Adlai Stevenson, maybe, or you had Paul Simon. Those guys didn't have any dough. And Stevenson might have family money, but Paul Simon didn't have any money. He came back. He was teaching at Eastern Illinois or someplace. I mean,
and a real nice guy. I think Andy. I know I met him. I think you met him too, Andy. Right.
Well, quick interruption to the story. Please hold the thought. But he was signing his memoir at the National Press Club, big book fair they have, and I just started chatting with him, and. And then, you know, I swapped cards. He was teaching at Southern Illinois.
Yeah, Southern Illinois, one of those ones down there, yeah.
And he did an amazing thing. He wrote a letter back to me on his professor's stationery. I really enjoyed talking with you. Thank you for the conversation. And I thought, this guy doesn't have a staff. He's a professor. And then... a day later, he died of old age. And I've treasured that letter because I'm thinking, well, this is what you'd kind of hope for from a politician. You know, somebody's interested in meeting people and kind of follows up and really is no gain whatsoever in him writing to me. And then he dies of old age while he's still doing it.
Wow.
So that's what we want, and thanks for the time interrupting your story. I hope you.
Well, no, this is leading to you giving me an answer. But you fast forward, and who knows if it was already starting to happen. Well, then you get to Cheney, who's clearly still involved in Kellogg Brown and Root with all the asbestos stuff and everything else. And he basically, when they said, "Hey, you." Are you still managing your own stock stuff? And he basically said, you know, up yours. And there wasn't any... I'm sitting there going, well, this must have been a convention and not really a rule. It clearly can't be a law. And now it seems like everybody's trading all over the damn place, and nobody thinks boo about it. I mean, was it just an old boys convention? As soon as somebody said I'm not doing it, everybody said okay, he's not doing it, or what? I mean, was it ever? I mean, remember a story about when Bubba Smith made it to the Colts, and they used to make every rookie had to sing it in a training camp dinner. So Bubba Smith was a man among boys, and the linebacker says, "Bubba, you got to get up and sing." And Bubba stands up and he goes, "Bubba, don't sing," and sat back down. Nobody was going to make him sing. Is this sort of the same thing? I mean, Cheney said, "Screw you guys, I'm doing it," and nobody said you can't.
It is. Well, who's got part of the attack on all authority? Newspapers, universities, scientists. Is who's left that, or and judges for that matter, who's left with any authority to tell anybody anything? You know,
that's quite a statement
to somebody who's universally respected, maybe the new Pope, but he comes under attack too. I mean, who is there?
I don't know. I want to know who the cops are coming after. It's not me. It's one of you guys.
it might be we're down. It might be the paramedic leaving downstairs. We're above engine company number one. And they do all the expressway work and something. So
right.
But yeah, you're right. I mean, what if you had? I think we talked about this a couple of weeks ago, Andrew and Wayne. Is it if there was going to be an Iran-Contra investigation? You know. Who's the Dan Inouye you can pick up to run the thing? Is there anybody left in either House of Congress that is, you know, untoward? I mean, is not have some kind of brushstroke on him? I think my guy is pretty well known, pretty well thought of. Mike Quigley, I think, is considered pretty honest, but he's not a national name or anything.
Well, part of the process, and we've. Wayne and I have looked at and gotten to know personally some of the people who do it, is that if anybody becomes prominent, then there's a very well-funded group of operators whose job it is to smear them. Now, here's an amazing fact that I'll just float. But if anybody went on Wikipedia and looked at who the most admired woman in America was, and I've done this, and if you went from 1992 to about 2008, every year but one, it was Hillary Clinton, and the one year was Laura Bush. And what we now know is that, like anyone, she's got flaws, problems that can be exploited, particularly people that are successful and try to make money and get ahead. But she went from being virtually every year the most admired woman to being a kind of not just a name to invoke hatred and contempt, but in some very religious circles, they would call her Satan, an agent of yep. Satan, and that.
Well, I was called a spawn of Satan by the guy who's now Lieutenant Governor of Texas, Dan Patrick. I was on a radio, Fox Radio of all places, hosted by the late Alan Combs, and it was over religion, separation of religion and government, and he didn't like what I had to say, and he called me a spawn of Satan, and I wear that with that's a badge of honor.
I'm saying you're pretty proud of that.
yeah, damn, but I never thought the guy would. He had a radio show himself. Down in Houston, but I never thought he'd be elected lieutenant governor. Now they say he could be replacing Abbott, if he decides not to run again, so.
Well, so if Paul Simon, to take that example, were alive, and if he were running for high office, so, you know, a U.S. senator, Tammy Duckworth or Mike Quigley, the congressman, they're not gonna. It's not worth it to get the whole attack squad to go after them, but let them stick their head too far out of the foxhole, and the howitzers will be aimed at them.
But you know, there used to be. I'm not doing an Andy and Mayberry thing here, but there are some people, and I keep using Dan Inouye as it. I would even consider like a Bob Dole, even some guys that clearly had a serious war record, did some stuff maybe in industry, had been in office for a while. You could tell when they walk into a room, you could sort of tell this is not a guy you push around. And by the way, he has a background that's go ahead and try type of thing. And I don't know if there's many guys around like that anymore. I mean, what would a Tip O'Neill be today? I mean, that guy was fearless. Go ahead.
Yeah, I was just going to say George McGovern. One of the things I think he failed to do in 1972 may have been because of the whole Vietnam. George McGovern was a World War II a bomber pilot who flew several missions over Germany, and one I think he may have been the only guy that survived the plane being shot up, and you know, he was able to land it. This is George McGovern, the guy, the peace that Nixon used to call him. But yeah, I'm afraid that World War II generation, I think they try to do good things in Congress, and they're all gone.
The Vietnam people, I got to know the Republican from South Dakota, Larry Pressler, who was the first Vietnam veteran to be elected to Congress, later longtime senator from South Dakota, head of the Commerce Committee. And he was a very thoughtful, good guy, and he wouldn't last at all these days. Because it's all about, are you supporting, for the Republicans, Trump, and for the Democrats, at least until recently, maybe still, heavy support of identity groups is a big ticket. And it's far from the thoughtful image that they like to portray, the great deliberative bodies. I mean, they're not even really holding hearings on people or appointments or legislation anymore with the thought of finding out what to do. I mean, the legislation is passed in omnibus bills where the lobbyists are working late into the night to sneak stuff in that the members haven't even read, because it's part of a 1,000-page bill, and that's called up, and only the lobbyists and the leadership know what's in it.
That's pretty scary. S&P futures up 13, NASDAQ futures up 67. We're going to have a CPI here in a second, guys, so we're going to have to roll through this. Be right back, Stocks and Jacks.
This self-directed trading is a lonely job. Online trading is not as easy as point and click.
No, it's not. Everyone, even professionals, need to share ideas and think out loud every now and then.
That's what I like about PTI Pro Direct. Their staff of former option floor traders really helps me choose the right strategy for trading option volatility and plan the time decay for my covered writing program.
Yep, nothing can replace years of trading experience to stop you from making that dumb trade and for saving a few bucks. We've all been there and done that.
Yeah, I have access to all that great trading advice and experience for just a penny a share for stocks, $1 for equity options, and $1 minimum a trade.
Our clients at PTI ProDirect can call when they need a little help on a trade or just to talk about the market in general. We trade every day. We love this stuff.
That's what I like most about PTI ProDirect. Cheap prices along with great advice from real floor traders. It's the best of both worlds.
Tell your friends. That's PTIProDirect.com, PTIProDirect.com.
Hear ye, the Homer Broadcasting System is on the air.
Stocks, jocks,
Starks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now, right here, right now, right now.
We're back.
Well, we're back, Stocks and Jocks. I'm Tom Howe, Jim Lauer on the board. I think, Jimmy, we got a, what do we got, a point, 0.4% on the CPI here, right? All items, they can't be as good as anybody wanted here. I'm not... S&P futures haven't moved yet, though, but that number's got to be out, isn't it?
I am...
What am I looking at? It's out. Weekly. They're talking about the weekly jobless claims, but isn't the CPIs today, too, right? What am I missing? I don't see any flying around.
The only thing that I see on Yahoo is inflation ticks up again, complicating Fed's path.
Yeah, I got it. It's a... July 25 to August 25 is 0.4%, and a seasonally adjusted, unadjusted is 0.3. That's high. Let me see what it is, food and energy. But it's not, doesn't seem to be moving the market much at all. Let's see, all items less prudent energy, 0.3. So that's higher than anybody thought. Whatever, it's not moving things all that much. But why don't you do a quick traffic weather sports as the rest of these markets settle down around the world. But right now, we're up 3 in the S&P, and we're up 20 in the NASDAQ. Give us a quick graphic
okay.
Weather sports.
Well, Cubs won, Sox won, and we have Thursday night football. The Commanders will be at Green Bay today. On traffic, the inbound Kennedy from O'Hare is now at 63 minutes. The inbound from Montrose is 37. As we keep moving down, times are increasing. The outbound Kennedy is now at 39 minutes from O'Hare. The inbound Edens is at 55 from Deerfield. The inbound from Lake Cook is at 57. The outbound from Lake Cook is now at 46. So times again, we are increasing. The Eisenhower, the inbound is now at 61 minutes. The outbound is at 31. This is from the Wolf Interchange. The Dan Ryan inbound is now at 37. Outbound, surprisingly, is at 12. Back to you, Chief.
Guys, how do you get... I'm looking at these consumer price things. The number is 2.9 year over year. Now, I'm just... How did we go from... In my lifetime, when we've been talking about this inflation a long time ago, you took the month and you multiplied it by 12 to find out where you are today. Now, if you want to blend it a little bit, you took the 2 months and you did it by 6 or something. The number today is 0.4. Well, you know, 0.4 times 12 is what is that? that's a lot, right? What I mean, 0.4 times 12 was 4.8, right? It's not 2.9. What am I missing here?
Well, I'll tell you that I hear people saying, the effects of the tariffs haven't really hit people yet. I tend to stay away from big supermarket chains. I try to give my business and where I live. There's a great Polish market that sells a lot of imported stuff from Poland, Eastern Europe, and an Italian market. Same thing. They bring a lot of imported olive oil, olives from Italy, and a lot of the Hispanic places here in Florida. A lot of their stuff they bring in from South America, but I've noticed the last couple times I've been to these markets, I don't know how long they can stay in business. They can't eat the costs like supposedly Walmart and Target can.
I don't think they can either.
No, their prices are going up. I guess they're hoping that their clientele, who tend to be Polish, Italian, or people from Latin America will continue to patronize them. But, you know, there'll come a time when, you know, this stuff is going to be cost prohibitive for people, especially here in Florida, where a lot of the people are retirees on fixed income. So I've seen things actually now double in price at the retail level.
Well, the stuff with the de minimis stuff, maybe that's probably more of a topic for next week. But
yeah,
two things I want to ask you guys. One is, well, we got to talk a little bit about the shooting yesterday. But before we do that, just you guys get around a lot. I'm not, you know, it's not an accusation. That's a fact. What there's something. Remember the Star Trek episode where Scotty says to Spock, you know, the ship just doesn't feel right. And Spock says to him, "That's an insane statement. A ship can't feel anything." And Scotty goes, "No, it doesn't feel right. It's not reacting the way it should, and all the different stuff I'm doing." And Spock says, "Well, if you can't give me a specific stuff, basically shut up." It turns out
that's illogical.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Turns out Scotty was right, and actually Spock apologized to him, which I never saw him do before, but he this week, just lob a few things that happened out to you guys. And was it Morgan Stanley the other day, or one of those firms that did a big study on? Well, they all do studies. In the last year, and I think it was the 12 calendar months, that something like 80 or 85 or 90% of the population, if you look at their wage increases versus inflation, even with the funky inflation numbers we have, were essentially losers on the year, and 10% of the people were winners to some extent, you know, depending on how much stock you had versus not stock you had and which stocks you had. You contrast that with the Oracle situation yesterday, where they come out and they're already up 40% on the year, actually 40% almost in the last few months. And the stock, they come out yesterday and they gave really good revenue for this year. My hat's off to them. They're up like 12.7% from last year. And they talked about good revenue this year, and then the 2027 number they lobbed out there was like, you know, something from Mars. And stock is up. The straddle was $22, call and put on the earnings. Stock's up 40, 50, 60, 70, 103. To where, and NVIDIA, which is kind of, you know, sort of in the same thing with this cloud slash AI, is up $8, and Microsoft's up a bunch. And I'm sitting there going, okay, NVIDIA, 25 billion shares outstanding, so times 8, that's $200 billion in market cap. Oracle's got 2.8 billion shares outstanding, times 100, well, that's $280 billion, right, by my count. And then Microsoft is up a bunch, too. So we're talking two-thirds of $1 trillion in the few stocks. Palantir was up a bunch. In this five or six stock area, we're pushing two-thirds to three-quarters of $1 trillion over what's the future is going to bring to these people. And I'm always, when I'm on not only my show, but if I'm with somebody else, I never once say that Oracle's a bad buy or it's a sell, because I don't know. But they may in fact do that in 2027, and by the way, they could do better. I wouldn't, you know, it's not up to me to make that discussion, so I'm not going to say go sell it or go buy it or whatever. But the thing I can say pretty much categorically is they can't all do that in 2027 if the regular schlumps like us aren't even breaking even. It doesn't feel right. I feel like I'm Scotty here. It doesn't feel right. What some people's view of the world is versus others. The Bears are building a stadium, and to me it's all the same topic. I think that's why you guys like coming on. The Bears are going to build a $5 billion stadium, or somebody is. They're not going to build it, but okay, what do they see ticket prices in 2027? $2,000 a ticket? I mean what are the seat leases going to, or the seat licenses? $100,000? Yeah. I mean, what, there's a different view of the world here, no matter who you're talking to. What do you guys think?
Yeah, the thing that all those three companies you mentioned have in common, I'll put my hat on as a one-time senior fellow at the Electronic Privacy Information Center in Washington. They all have a vested interest in the development of the surveillance state, which is going, I mean, you talk about cloud computing, you talk about the powers that are going to be given to some of these federal agencies now, especially Oracle, and the other two that are offering cloud services. This is where they see the market is going to be in developing this sort of surveillance state, where the government is going to be putting all kinds of revenue into tracking what people are doing, what they're saying, what they're writing on social media, and even worse, what they're thinking. And so I think that's why they're seeing a rosy future. And, you know, another company out there that's is Peter Thiel's Palantir,
yeah,
which is, you know, I'd be looking closely at what how they're doing.
You know what? They're trading $166.94 right now. You know what their revenue is per share?
What?
Take a guess.
I don't know.
But dollar and a half.
Yeah.
I mean,
to use your spaceship analogy, it didn't feel right, not because of the human perceptions, but maybe there is, you know, I don't know, to use a metaphor of a jalopy, you know, the tires weren't running right, or whatever. And in this case, I totally agree with what Wayne is saying. And to take it a little farther, the effects haven't kicked in, because as Wayne says, all of these companies are high-tech surveillance companies, but the implications haven't kicked in yet. But it's going to hurt consumers, the ordinary people, that job losses through the efficiencies of AI, or very targeted implications or harms or benefits that these surveillance tools can use down the road. So this whole concept of all of this private tax and social security and health information we have, where did that disappear to when Doge and Elon Musk people took over these departments? Under the name of cutting costs, whoever it is, have all of our most intimate information. How is that gonna help us?
You dudes is why I love having you. Let's assume for a second, and again, I want to talk about the shooting. Let's assume for a second the market is somewhat rational, and you say to yourself, why all of a sudden are these companies this big and this crazily valued? The market can't be that dumb. Maybe, and Wayne brought it up, maybe we're entering a more fascist type economy where there's going to be, you know, only 25 survivors with their nose up the ass of government, and they're going to be the companies that are left. Maybe Oracle is worth this much because of their access, and I don't know if what's his name's got his nose up Trump's behind, but
Larry Ellison definitely does.
Okay, I didn't know that, but I'm saying,
yeah, and his son, you know, is basically the new owner of CBS,
and he's at CBS News, once called the Tiffany Network, because it goes back, and they thought they were presented themselves as above the other networks. There's a radical new regime of you have to be under the new management, where Ellison's sons just bought it or acquired it, where you have to be deferential to the Trump interests. I mean, it's clear. And just one other kind of data point before we move on, but did you guys hear about this launch of this $500,000 per initiation club in Georgetown over the weekend where there was a threatened fist fight between the Treasury Secretary and who did he threaten?
Oh, this guy Pulte, the federal housing whatever. Yeah.
So it's
by the way, you guys are both in on this, right? 500 grand apiece?
Yeah, right.
Yeah, we're...
It's called the Executive. It's run by Don Jr.
Yeah.
And some others. And you have to pay $500,000 to get admission. And they had kind of a launch party over the weekend. And,
Well, you know, kind of the last comment before. So there's a boy, I could talk to you guys forever. But when you were talking about your debate with the guy in Texas regarding religion.
Dan Patrick, yeah.
You guys make the line here. I was talking yesterday with Russell, and if I don't want religion being part of government, okay, but I also have a feeling that if people don't have religion and have no morals, you can't write enough laws, you can't write a constitution that can keep a place together. If the only reason why people don't do something wrong is because other people are going to catch them, and not because they don't believe it's wrong to do in the first place, I think we got a problem. So I don't know where the line is there between, I don't want the Catholic Church running the government, but I sure as hell wouldn't mind a few of the people that run the government brought up by the nuns and get smacked upside the head if you do something wrong along the way. I mean, so I don't know where the line is there, but to me, a lot of times, you know, some of the religions now don't necessarily mean morality, but when I grew up, it sort of did. I don't know. I don't think you want a bunch of immoral people running around if you're not cheating, you're not trying, and yet I don't want religion in there either. So where's my line here? You guys, somebody help me here.
I would just say, as some of the throughout history, some of the most moral people were not actually very religious.
Well, I mean, I'm saying, but they were taught by somebody.
I know what you're saying. I think the lack of ethics now, I like to think that my parents brought me up with a certain set of standards. Now I may have backslid on some of those over the years.
I get it. When the nun with the ruler disappears, you can slide back a little.
I didn't go to parochial school, but I used to have to face the wrath of my father when he got home from work, which was probably worse than a nun with the ruler.
Well, by then a nun would call home, which made things worse. But all right, so we talked real quick. We're talking about a page two, Paul Harvey. Yesterday, we've seen political people get shot, blah, blah, blah. And some people want to make a name for themselves. Some people... And some, I know I keep using this book, and people probably don't know what I'm talking about, but there's been two movies now, The Day of the Jackal. This reminds me of almost somebody who, from what I see right now, that this is somebody who is immensely prepared. When I say prepared, going up and shooting somebody, if you don't care what happens to you, is one thing.
Chief, that was a kill shot.
Well, but also, where I'm going with this is that preparing to kill somebody is, I won't say easy, but preparing to kill somebody where you get away is a factor of 10 harder. It probably means that he took the whole schedule, looked at every single spot this guy was going to be, sort of like the Jackal going after De Gaulle, to where the preparation for this, it probably had, like Lou was saying, or is this, you're maybe somewhere going to find the gun and the dark clothing buried in the building somewhere, and he was on the interstate and gone in 5 minutes. This smacks to me, and I could be, well, maybe I hope I'm wrong, of serious preparation by either a foreign assassin, somebody here, could be somebody on the right trying to inflame people. I don't think it's your normal idiot running around not liking Trump. I mean, that's I don't think that's it at all here.
No. I think it's somebody that actually has military training. But you're right, the fact that they got away, Orem, Utah, it's not a huge place, so they had to have taken that into consideration. My thinking is that maybe they changed into some sort of clothing where they would not be deemed suspicious by anybody.
I mean, clearly the dude was not walking along with a gun in dark clothing to his car. Something happened.
No. Right. Yeah.
Remember the, I saw the movie so long ago, I read the book. When I might as well, since I tell this story twice today, there was a lot of people in France that were pissed off at De Gaulle because he disbanded the Foreign Legion, right? And all those guys were making money basically stealing stuff overseas, so they were all pissed off at him. Sort of like when Kennedy wanted to get rid of the CIA. Duh. It kind of goes together, doesn't it? So they had all these different attempts at De Gaulle, and they always missed. So they hired this guy. And the guy comes in, and he wants all this money, and he wants all this time. And one of the guys in the meeting says, "What do you need all this time for?" He goes, "I don't need all this time to kill De Gaulle. I need all this time to find a spot where I can get away."
Yeah.
Or something along those lines. Totally different project if you want to survive it and be gone, right?
Exactly. And as I recall, there were 30 attempts on De Gaulle.
Yeah.
And they didn't kill him. And I, back in those days, news coverage was much more part of life for Americans. And so I was a little kid, but because on radio they required, I think, 5 minutes of news every hour, you know, just as a little kid, I would know the names of probably a third of the African rulers and most of the capitals and stuff. And De Gaulle was kind of portrayed back then as, oh, this arrogant Frenchman who doesn't really respect...
Which he was, by the way, which he was.
Yeah, but by the way, he was a war hero in World War II, as I'm later, you know, read about, and he wasn't treated as any kind of equal. It certainly didn't penetrate at least my teenage consciousness that this was a guy who underwent 30 assassination attempts at a time that the U.S. was also undergoing assassinations. So your point about people wanted to get him and were well trained to do it is very apropos.
Didn't he only would ride in a Citroen because he had survived two or three attempts in a Citroen, right? Wasn't that the story?
Yeah, I guess in a lucky car. By the way, the one thing is that 3 weeks ago, the FBI, the head of the FBI office in Salt Lake City, a woman, they mentioned her name, I forget what her name is, but she got fired for no reason, and she was like one of the key people in the FBI's counter terrorism a task force, very highly thought of. She was an expert in going after radicalized groups, but she got fired for apparently no reason just 3 weeks ago. And now the issue is would this have occurred if the FBI had been left alone by Pam Bondi and Cash Patel and this guy.
Andrew's our attorney. I just read yesterday, but I don't think I'd want to be a judge now with all the stuff coming at you. Didn't a bunch of people from the FBI that got fired by this Cash Patel guy, they're suing him saying that they were fired only because of their political affiliation. Where does that go on a legal basis, Andrew? What is that?
Well, what's interesting about that, it's funny how our thought patterns run in the same line. So I looked at the story in the New York Times on that. I thought, gee, I wonder who the attorneys are for this. And so they had a link, and I was actually meaning to talk to Wayne about it, but I'll do it on air here. The attorneys for those three fired high-level FBI executives their lawsuit says that they were fired under the suspicion that they weren't supportive enough of Trump.
Right.
They were career people, so this goes to the kind of intelligence, digging into their background that we're talking about earlier through these search tools. But here's who their attorneys were. Abby Lowell.
Who's that?
And a woman named Frey. And what's interesting to me about it is I had met both of these people at the National Press Club last month. Separately, they were talking. And Abby Lowell is this, you know, kind of brilliant lawyer who's represented Kushner, Hunter Biden. And the woman was, she worked at Skadden Arps, and she quit on principle, curtailing a brilliant career in law, at least in the private sector, because she said, no, they're going to be paying essentially extortion with this $100 million deal with Trump so that Trump will lay off him. And she quit. And she ends up working with Abby Lowell on this type of case, which I'm sure is at best entrepreneurial, but it's not being a partner at Skadden Arps. And they're representing these people like, and I had a chance to talk to both of them after their discussions at the National Press Club, but they're representing these kind of government employees who are targeted because of their political beliefs.
But it's not, we're not talking about a civil service system. Where's the law that says if you were big enough of an ass, you can't do that? Fire people just because you don't like them.
Well, the law is called the Pendleton Act, 1883. Republican James Garfield successfully campaigned to create a civil service in the United States to replace the patronage system. And oddly enough, one of his presidential supporters who wanted to be like ambassador to France and couldn't get a job because Garfield wanted a civil service based on merit, pulls out a gun and fatally shoots Garfield three blocks from where I'm talking to you now on Constitution Avenue. And the Congress, in reaction, implemented a civil service system. So that's the law.
Okay.
But how it applies, we have radical transformations enabled by the courts, to get back to your original question, where Trump says, well, I'm the president, so I get to fire anybody.
He thinks he's still on his TV show.
Yeah.
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 Hey, we got a dash, guys, but here, I'll leave you with this zinger, and feel free to use it. You mentioned Ellison and CBS and so forth. Larry Ellison has 1.2 billion shares of Oracle, so he was up at the high point yesterday. It's up a little bit again today. He was up $100 billion yesterday. So I'm going to say that's enough to buy every newspaper, every NFL football team, and maybe every baseball team. He was up yesterday.
And so, maybe another island in the Hawaiian Islands. He already owns one.
And what I'm saying, I think it's very difficult, surely for me, who manage people's money, that have money, and I'm not that unused to somebody with $1 million account or $2 million. We're not even talking the same planet as some of the power these people now have with this money. It's something that's never been seen on this earth, I don't think, except for maybe some king somewhere. I mean,
but they can't get everything, because here's one thing. It's obvious that they haven't bought. They haven't bought stocks and jacks.
He probably could afford that too.
Don't say that.
So suppose I cut you guys in for a bill. What would you say?
Hey, got a deal.
So what was the joke? We already know what you are. We're just negotiating the price.
That's right.
God. You guys take care of yourself. SP Futures up 17. NASDAQ Futures up 77. On that note, we'll be back tomorrow. Stocks and Jocks.
That's all, folks.